Welcome back to the Jennifer Hammond Show on SiriusXM Urban View.
Welcome back. Welcome back. We've been taking on such tough subjects. And so we're always talking about what can you do to make your neighborhood better. And in one way or another, we always want to find that hero in your neighborhood, that person who's really trying to make a difference. And what are you doing about it? What can you do? Everybody can help contribute to make their neighborhood better in one way or another. And one thing that's been so concerning over the years, and you've probably seen the headlines, there's really truly an epidemic for opioids and painkillers and not only the addiction to painkillers, but also the overdoses. It's so sad. According to research published in the Journal of the American Medical Association, just in 2017, almost 20 million individuals with a substance use disorder and more than 2 million qualified as having an actual addiction to opioids. So we can keep on going with, 2018, 2019, it seems it's getting worse and worse every single year. So we're adding to the conversation today, Dr. Bragg. She is an expert in providing non-surgical treatment for injuries. And this is specific because you want to find out how to get relief from pain without getting addicted to these painkillers. She's been featured on ABC, NBC, Fox, and she's been also quoted in different magazines from Women's World and Self magazine. So she has a reputation of really being able to be someone who can contribute to this conversation. Because as you know, I'm always looking for the silver lining. What can we do to make our neighborhoods better in one way or another? So Dr. Bragg, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
I'm so glad that you're here. We want to actually talk to you a little bit about, first of all, why is it so important to you to help people get rid of their pain but not have to use painkillers?
Well, it's important to me. I'm a board-certified pain physician in pain medicine, and there are about 80 million people in the United States, Jennifer, that suffer from chronic pain. So it's important to me because I've dedicated my life over 20 years seeing people suffering from chronic pain. And now with the opioid epidemic, some people are misusing medications. So it affects people at all walks of life. This is not something that's just defined by women or men or low or high socioeconomic people. It's everybody that is involved in this opioid epidemic, and that's why it's important to me.
And in the neighborhoods, I find that a lot of times this is kind of one of those secret killers or secret destructive forces that, again, people don't really talk about it. I had a friend recently who just confessed he went through a rehab, and I didn't know if he meant alcohol or what he was doing, and it was his prescription painkillers. Why do you think prescription painkillers are so abused in the United States?
Well, anything, when anything has money value to it, Jennifer, it gets abused, and they have a lot of street value, and so therefore people are selling them to people. When you get down to the people that are really abusing them, a lot of the statistics say that it really occurs in people who really didn't even have prescriptions. I'm sad that your friend was addicted to them, and that's why people need to make sure that they are seeing qualified people who are prescribing their medications. They need a doctor that does not think that pain management is synonymous with painkillers. There's more to that term. Unfortunately, the specialty is called pain management, and people get it misunderstood and think that that means painkillers. And there's more to it than that. And that's what has led to the misuse and abuse of the medications, I think, because doctors, unfortunately, in the 90s, we're led to believe that these medicines could not become addictive. And when you said, I hurt, they just gave you medicine.
Right. And pain management, that is a term that many people don't understand. Would you define a little bit more, what does pain management mean, and not just drugs?
You want to have comprehensive pain management. And, oftentimes, unfortunately, a primary care doctor will send someone to a pain management physician like myself and make them say, okay, you have to go to Dr. Bragg to get your medicine. And so you've given that patient that message right then, the wrong message, that the only thing pain management means is medicine. You want to have a full evaluation. You want a doctor that's going to evaluate you, do an examination, look at your diagnostic studies, and come up with what is your diagnosis. Because all pain is not receptive to painkillers anyway. Some people may need a Motrin-type medicine, an NSAID is what we call them, anti-inflammatory. You may need Tylenol. You may need physical therapy, injections. There's a whole array of things that one could do for pain management other than just medications. And that's what I want people to understand. And that's what's destroying the neighborhood when people think that one thing is just pain management. What type of pie did your grandmother make, Jennifer?
She made pumpkin pie around Thanksgiving. She loved to cook. She was also one of those people who didn't believe in measuring cups and recipes.
And my grandmother didn't either. And now, unfortunately, she's dead, and that's why we can't reproduce her sweet potato pie. Because we stood there, nobody knows what are the right amount.
Exactly.
The reason I asked you that question, you might say, "That's right. Why did you ask me that?" Because what I like to tell people is pain management should be like the experience they had with watching their grandmother make that pumpkin pie. Your grandmother understood that that pumpkin pie needed more than a pumpkin, didn't it, Jennifer?
Absolutely.
She had to put what else? What other ingredients did she put in it?
She's so funny. She actually was one of those people who would kind of hide and be very secret about her ingredients.
Uh-huh.
And it's so funny because I used to think, well, what is the point of having a secret recipe if your granddaughter doesn't get to actually recreate it later when you're gone so I can think wonderful thoughts as I eat that delicious pie?
Right.
So odd.
But she had other ingredients. Like my grandmother made a sweet potato pie, but she would put nutmeg in it, cinnamon, sugar, and whatever. But my point is, our grandmothers understood that the pie needed more than one ingredient, even if she didn't share it with you. What people now think pain management is one ingredient, painkillers. And you should not have it. You should have it just like your grandmother did, with different ingredients. And that's what makes good comprehensive pain management. And then you don't have to just rely on painkillers. Whereas there are people that may need painkillers, you don't want it to just be that one ingredient, just like the pumpkin pie just couldn't be only with pumpkins and sugar, or it never would have had the taste that it had.
Nope, that's for sure. It would be one of those coffee drinks.
One of those coffee drinks, that's right.
It wouldn't work at all. But that's also one of the things that comes to mind is what's the difference between acute pain and chronic pain? When you're doing pain management, you know, I know that those two terms are very important on what you're going to do and what track you're going to use to help someone.
Right. Acute pain is something new. Like after I talk to you, if you've been sitting all day from when you started work this morning at 8 o'clock until now, and you haven't gotten up, then people usually can develop some type of back pain. I recommend that people with back pain, to avoid back pain, is you get up and stand after an hour and a half or 2 hours. So acute pain is any pain that you've had less than about a 3-month period. Chronic pain is pain that's 3 months or longer. So a new pain, a pain that you're going to have when you're pulling weeds in your garden the couple of days afterwards, those are acute pains. And chronic pain is the pain that really gets where people are taking opioids and things like that for a long period of time.
Yeah, I think it's so important that we make sure that we know that when pain is temporary, it's only going to be there for a short amount of time, or when it's chronic and it's going to be there a long time, because there are different ways, I am sure, that you would take on paths of treating that to make sure that someone doesn't get addicted to painkillers. So, but if someone does get addicted, what is the best way to treat that addiction?
Well, if they do get addicted, there are medications that we can give them to kind of taper them off of the medication so that they can go through a weaning phase and be taken off the medications. Sometimes they have to have the support of an addictionologist so that they can help them with the addiction. And also, there would be some input from a psychologist as well to help them with the behavior aspects of the addiction. But I think it's important, Jennifer, if you don't mind, I'd like people to understand the difference between being dependent on a drug and being addicted to one.
Yeah, talk about that.
I think that's important because a lot of times it's misunderstood. People think that everybody that's taking a pain medicine is addicted to it. I don't know if you had anyone that works with you that loves caffeine. I used to have a lady that worked in my office. Mary was a medical assistant, and she loved to have her colas. And if she had her 12-ounce cola, I knew that she could work a room, work the patients. And if she didn't have it, she would have a headache, and she was irritable because she had become dependent on having that caffeine, much like people like coffee. You may know some people work with you. If they don't have that cup of coffee, you want to slip them a cup of coffee.
And I do. I know somebody who has an addiction to Dr. Pepper, and he needs a Dr. Pepper so badly that when he's grumpy, that is the first thing I do is I go find an ice-cold Dr. Pepper and give it to him.
That's right. That's exactly right. And that's what I would do with Mary. I would give her a 12-ounce a cola, because she had become so dependent on it. But what I noticed in a while, that one 12-ounce didn't work as well for her, because she had become tolerant. You hear people talk about they're taking more medicines now.
Yeah.
That means
yeah.
they're tolerant. What the 12-ounce Dr. Pepper didn't do for your friend, they now maybe needed 20 ounces because they are tolerant.
Yep.
And that's the same way people become with opioids. And you would say addicted is when that person with that Dr. Pepper now needs 2 liters. They really need a whole lot of. And we know that the brain changes a little bit with caffeinated products or being addicted to chocolate. It's the same thing that happens when you are addicted to drugs, because addiction is really characterized by 3 things.
Well, wait a minute. I don't think we should ever put chocolate in that category.
You don't think you should ever put...
Because chocolate's important for spiritual uplifting as well.
But there is medical research that people can become what they call a chocoholic.
Yeah.
And that their receptors in the brain can change because they've been on chocolate, you know, so long. And the craving is that they get an intense craving, loss of control over it because they want the chocolate. The difference is you can stop it from a few days and everything in the brain can settle down. Whereas when you're taking the opioids, it takes a long time when you've made those brain changes. But I just want people to understand that everyone on an opioid is not always addicted. Sometimes they are dependent, like your friend with the Dr. Pepper. When he didn't have it, he was kind of going through a little withdrawal. He might have had a headache.
Yep.
He might have been irritable because he was withdrawing from that caffeine. And that's what people do when they're on a pain medicine. They don't have it. They withdraw. And that's not an addict. That's a person who's dependent and not necessarily a addict. And I just like people to know that distinction.
I think it's important to know that distinction. I still believe that chocolate is not something you get addicted to. You might get addicted to the sugar, but I think, especially dark chocolates, I still believe that they're good for you. But I do believe...
It's the sugar and the fat in the chocolate that makes them addicted. That's what it is. It's the sugar and fat in the chocolate that triggers the pathways in the brain. That's what does it with the chocolate. You're right. So you can have your chocolate.
Yay! I knew I had to win that one for sure, because I don't want anybody thinking they can't have their chocolate. But it is one of those, if you have dark chocolate, you don't need as much sugar, and milk isn't always agreeable to everybody. So it's important, you know, a lot of times not to have milk chocolate. Again, a lot of times milk chocolate has more sugar in it. So again, just pay attention to your sugars.
I was just trying to use something that people eat and drink to let them understand dependence versus chocolate, but they are in no way as deleterious as the person who is addicted to a opioid analgesic. But I was just trying to show you being dependent versus addicted.
Yeah, definitely. So what I want to know is also for people, if they're listening right now and they might know somebody or themselves, what are some of the things? I know you have also, you wrote a book, right?
Yes, I did.
Will you tell us about your book?
My book is called Knockout Pain, Secrets to Maintain a Healthy Back. And it was an Amazon bestseller. And I dedicated it to my mother when she injured her back in 2013. And she said, I was her caregiver. And she said, now you need to write a book to help other people.
Aww.
And so it tells people about various different diagnoses of back injuries and what you can do other than using medications. It tells you things like common things, the way you can hurt your back. Vacuuming. How really should you vacuum? How should you cook? How should you do your decorations? And how are you sitting at the computer? So it goes through all these things of how you should lift your children, your grandchildren, how to go to the beach and lift your cooler. And Jennifer, it also tells us if we don't want back pain, we shouldn't wear a heel greater than 2 inches. Some people don't like to hear that, and that's paid for my car and house because people keep wearing those high heel shoes.
They pay for your car and your house.
Car
oh, my
house,
goodness.
And I tell them all the time, and women will come in and say, Dr. Brack, oh, my God, I should have changed my shoes before I came in here. I said, I've been telling you for years, but you keep wanting to pay for my house and car, and I try to make my good contributions, you said, to the neighborhood and tell people what not to do. But those women love those high heel shoes. And I also give you exercises that you could do right there in the office, how you could do some stretches and things when you're in your office to prevent back pain while you're at work. You could get a stability ball and sit on it, one of those big balls you buy at a sports store.
Yep, I have one of those.
And you can sit on it while you're doing your computer, and that's going to increase your core muscles in your back. And so I tell people practical things in my book without using medications that can help them to relieve back pain. One of the most important chapters in it, I think, and then I won't go on it, it tells you how to make your visit with your doctor better. And this is where I think when it comes to pain management, people get caught up into what test did she run? What test did he do? The most important thing is the conversation you have with the doctor. Were you really clear what is your pain? Because unlike other specialties, the doctor can't see your pain. So we have to go by your description. And so I tell people, write one sentence. Where does it hurt? Where does it go? What makes it better? What makes it worse? And people don't like to do that. Rehearse it with someone and see, is that clear? Did your significant other understand what you say? Did they understand it? If they didn't, guess what, Jennifer? The doctor won't either.
Yeah, that's true. That's really good advice. Again, one of the things I say in real estate, in anything that you're doing, in any kind of relationship, it's about communication. And the more that you can communicate what your needs are, and honestly, you know, what's happening, because so often we end up just keeping that all inside and we don't talk about what's really happening. A lot of times it's because we've been trained to be polite or, you know, we're just not comfortable talking about things that, you know, again, make us hurt. You know, sometimes it's emotional, but physically your pain you need to talk about with your doctor and really making sure that they understand what that is, because that is so, so important. Well, Dr. Bragg, I'm so happy to have you on the show, and we'll make sure we put up your information. I know your website is knockoutpain.com, and your Twitter is at Dr. Winifred Bragg, and Facebook is at Spine and Orthopedic Pain Center. We'll make sure we put that all up on our social media as well. Thank you so much for all that you're doing to make our neighborhoods better.
And thank you for having me, and I hope that together we have helped to knock out pain without using painkillers.
Thank you. I love that. Well, we'll be back after the break with more of the Jennifer Hammond Show.
This is the Jennifer Hammond Show on Sirius XM Urban View.